Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, December 12, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, "Retiring Deputy Police Chief, He's Been Go-To Guy Since Day One," by Mary Schenck Champagne. Joe Gallo was doing a ride-along with his friend, Champaign Police Officer Rob Morris, in 1994 when he helped nab an armed robber. Then an officer in Lincolnshire, Gallo had and his police academy buddy were cruising Green Street through Campustown, about to clock out to enjoy a beverage, when Morris saw a man he believed was a suspect in a string of holdups. Morris and Gallo watched from a distance as the man approached a business, then walked away. But the young officers stayed close. Rob was convinced he was coming back. Sure enough, he did. At the old Pizza World. This guy lunges across the counter with a knife, and Rob called it in, and we went across the street, and as he was coming out, he got arrested. That's how it all started, Gallo said of his career as one of Champaign's finest. With that impressive assist to talk about during his job interview, Gallo was hired a few months later as a probationary Champaign police officer under the department's then novel Experienced Officer Hiring Program. A graduate of Illinois State University, Gallo had also been a police officer there before Lincolnshire. On Tuesday, the 50-year-old wrapped up his 24-year affiliation with Champaign Police, retiring as deputy chief and having done almost every job in the building but chief. He worked under five chiefs. Anthony Cobb, who promoted Gallo to deputy chief just a month after he was named chief in 2012, said he's going to miss his colleague. "He's been my right arm for a long period of time," said Cobb, who recalled speaking with everyone from the janitorial staff to patrol to command before choosing Gallo as deputy chief. Overwhelmingly, the staff supported and respected Joe. Cobb credited Gallo for pushing the concept of unconditional respect department-wide, helping establish the Youth Assessment Center to keep juveniles out of the justice system, and hiring approximately 60 new officers since about 2013. "We've been hiring about 15 to 16 police officers a year." He sat through most of the interviews, Cobb said. Today, Gallo will apply what he has learned in Champaign to his new full-time post as the assistant director of the Police Training Institute at the University of Illinois. As the second in command to Director Michael Schlosser, Gallo will help supervise a staff of five other full-timers and about 128 adjunct staffers, many of them retired and active officers who teach recruits in 14 weeks how to properly police. "It was just too good of an opportunity to pass up," said Gallo, who fills a slot vacated earlier this year by Chuck Deacon, who had been at PTI for about 15 years. Deacon was a retired Champaign County Sheriff's Lieutenant when he began working at PTI. In Champaign, Gallo started in patrol in December 1994. He was a detective from 1997 to 1999, before being promoted to sergeant in 1999, then lieutenant in 2002. From 2004 until his promotion to deputy chief in 2012, Gallo headed up the Investigations Division. He was also a SWAT team member and later commander for a while. In his most recent role, Gallo has been responsible for professional standards, internal investigations, training, overseeing background checks on recruits, alcohol enforcement and police services, the civilians who staff the front desk and records. "I'll miss the people," he said. "I'm retiring from the police department, but I'll only be 10 blocks away, so it's not like I won't see them." As deputy chief, he was earning about $146,800 a year. His PTI job pays between $75,000 and $85,000. Cobb has promoted Lieutenant Todd Myers to Gallo's deputy chief position, effective December 24. Cobb said Myers' 16 years of supervisory experience within the department and his military background made him a good choice. Myers' promotion and Gallo's departure means there are openings for a lieutenant, a sergeant, and a detective to be filled. The other two deputy chiefs under Cobb are Dave Schaffer and Troy Daniels. Illinois volleyball in the Final Four, Final Fives. Fans give Illini spirited send-off on last leg of epic run. By Anthony Zillis, Champaign. The year was 1987, and then Illinois junior and Illini Pride member Thomas Durbin was tasked with creating an orange crush for volleyball. So Durbin had 50 t-shirts printed, garnered support from a few sponsors, and set up in the Kenny Gym stands behind the opposing team's bench. The Spikers student section, which is now called Spike Squad, was born. It turned out to be a perfect time to start the group. Mike Hebert's team made the next two Final Fours and won the two Big Ten titles. "It was an easy sell," Durbin said. "We were all excited about it, getting the shirt, getting to be there. We were in Kenny Gym, so we were right on top of the action." While Durbin was a fan for all three of Illinois' previous Final Four appearances, he wasn't able to witness any of them in person. But this weekend, he'll take his original 1987 Spikers shirt, complete with a stick figure spiking a ball over the net, to Minneapolis to see the Illini take on Nebraska on Thursday in the NCAA semifinals. On Tuesday, Durbin and a few hundred Illini fans lined the Huff Hall gym to send the team off to Minneapolis as the Illinois band played and Coach Chris Tamas and a couple of players said a few words to the Illini faithful. As the players went around to give high fives to all of the fans in attendance, Jordan Poulter stopped at Gina Stone and Gay Kabuti and gave the pair a hug. Stone, whose husband is a cousin of Poulter's mother, has grown close with Poulter throughout the last 4 years, and so has Kabuti. "It's been amazing to see someone have an experience with a change in a coach. We were so worried about where this was going to go for the whole team. And to see the beauty of these 2 years working with a coach that could just make them gel," Stone said. The duo wore shirts at the Illini's Elite Eight game that said, "Where's the beef?" On the front and on the back, "Who cares? We've got Poultry." Kabuti was even identified as Poulter's mother on ESPN. "They didn't fact check," Stone said. Stone and Kabuti will make the trip to Minneapolis along with their husbands, but not all in attendance Tuesday will be able to make the trip. Even though they won't be going this weekend, longtime fans Glenn and Laura Morrison still feel like they've been part of the journey. "It's a very intimate situation being a volleyball fan because you're in this little gym and the girls all stay 4 years," Glenn Morrison said. "It's a college experience, and rightly or wrongly, you feel like you get to know them a little bit. Where we sit, we get to know some of the parents." Durbin has been on a journey with the Illinois volleyball team for the last 31 years. This year has reminded him of the days when he and the Spikers rocked Kenny Gym. It brought back the level of excitement we had in 87 and 88, Durbin said. You're talking about the Illini greats now, and this run brought this team to that level. Just to watch this wave of it has been fantastic. From the local section, Jim Day, huge state pension woes growing. Our dedicated public servants in Springfield got some more news this week that they most assuredly don't want to hear. It comes from the General Assembly's Commission on Government Forecast and Accountability and concerns the state's public pension woes. As hard as it is to believe, the report reveals, once again, that when serious problems are ignored, they get worse instead of magically disappearing. Talk about unfair. For months now, news outlets writing about underfunded public pension funds have reported that Illinois' five funds are underfunded to the tune of $130 billion. It represents a huge financial sword of Damocles hanging over taxpayers' heads. That $130 billion figure was rounded up from the specific figure of $128.86 billion. That was for the 2017 fiscal year. The Commission reports there's a new figure for fiscal year 2018, which ended June 30. Now the state's pensions are underfunded by $133.68 billion. The primary reason for the increase was, again, actuarial insufficient state contributions, which increased the unfunded liability by $3.187 billion, accounting for 66.1% of the total increase, its report states. Here are a couple of other numbers to chew on. 10 years ago, in fiscal year 2008, the total unfunded liability was $54.4 billion. 10 years from now, in fiscal year 2028, the total unfunded liability is estimated to be $145.9 billion. If readers still have an appetite for more numbers, consider this. For the current fiscal year 2019, the state contributed $8.5 million in taxpayer funds to the five pension funds for state legislators, judges, teachers, state employees, and university retirees. At the same time, employees contributed another $1.5 billion. That's a total of $10 billion made available for investments, and the result is another increase in underfunding from $133.68 billion to $136.888 billion. In other words, the more the state is putting in, the further it is falling behind, because legislative funding mandates, huge though they are still not enough from an actuarial standpoint to keep even, let alone increase funding levels. Now, further consider that the state's $8.5 billion contribution to the pension funds is a part of its current roughly $38 billion budget, 21% plus. To those who wonder why there's not enough money for schools, roads, mental health, and law enforcement, the answer is that those needs are being crowded out by pensions as well as Medicaid spending. Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker has an idea for a partial solution, one he borrowed from the Center on Tax and Budget Accountability. He's considering issuing pension obligation bonds, in other words, borrowing, and using the proceeds for stepped-up contributions. But Eric Kim of Fitch Ratings views the move skeptically, noting that the state's credit rating is already just two notches above junk status. Depending on how the move is engineered, Kim said it would range from a credit negative to deficit financing. Illinois has tried that approach before, during the early years of the first administration of former Governor Rod Blagojevich. The state issued $10 billion in pension obligation bonds that generated $7.3 billion to reduce unfunded liabilities in the pensions. That was a bold but ultimately futile step, because governors and legislators failed to stay on top of the problems. After the $7.3 billion bond contribution in fiscal year 2004, pension underfunding stood at about $35 billion. Now it's nearly four times that amount. These numbers are enough to make the heads of ordinary citizens spin. Most people know they represent trouble, but how much is hard to say. But it's enough that legislators have preferred to let matters continue to get far worse than do something about them. After all, from their perspective, when the state is that far in the hole, what's a few more billion dollars? Legally speaking, Mary Schenck, who has been covering crime and courts for more than 35 years, chats with the headline makers on her beat. To hear this podcast in full, visit news-gazette.com. Late last month, John Carlton of Tolono put his sheriff's sergeant badge in a drawer to start a new chapter in his life. The now retired head of security at the Champaign County Courthouse saw all kinds of people and legal issues from an insider's perspective in his almost 26 years of service. He shared some of that with courthouse reporter Mary Schenck this week on Legally Speaking. Here's a sampling. After a brief stint as a hospital security guard, you answered a call from former Sheriff David Madigan about being a court security officer. Did you have a clue? I wanted to be in the patrol division. I wanted to be out in the squad car with blinking lights. I got doing what I was doing, and I realized I loved what I did. I loved the people. I took a great deal of pride in what I did. I believed in what we did there, and so I decided to stick with it. There were two officers who worked there when I was hired, three when I started. As time went along, they phased out the bailiff system. We went from 3 to 12. In April 8, 1997, a mentally ill man threw a lit Molotov cocktail at a seated judge during a jury trial, forever changing courthouse security in Urbana. What do you remember about that day? I ran through that door from the former courthouse annex to the courthouse, and the best thing I can say is it was pandemonium. People running through the building, the fire department was coming into the building. Sheriff Madigan stopped me and told me to go out to the south door of the courthouse, stay there, and don't allow anyone else to come into the building. That's where I was stationed for the better part of the day. I was out there when the FBI and ATF showed up, when the satellite news trucks from Indianapolis and Chicago showed up. It was kind of a surreal scene. It became national news. I remember the first time I saw the courtroom after the fire was out. That scene left an impression. It burned everything. Election update. Four file for Rantoul Village Board seats. Rantoul. Four candidates have filed for three open four-year terms on Rantoul Village Board in April's election. They include former trustee Gary Wilson, incumbents Harry Gamel and Chad Smith, and current trustee Sherry Johnson, who was appointed to the board. Filing to fill a two-year unexpired term are newcomers Jasmine Boyce and Mark Wilkerson. Other filings from around the area heading into day three of the eight-day period for candidates to get on the April 2 ballot. Allerton. At a caucus, three incumbents were nominated to run for their seats, all four-year terms. Barbara Sue McComas, Damon Ennis, and Sean Miller. Alvin. Incumbent Village President Mike Cunningham has filed papers to run for another four-year term. Also, two incumbent trustees, Rita Roderick and Lawrence Ogle, filed to run for two of the three open seats, which are four-year terms. Ludlow, Steve Thomas, appointed mayor last year to fill out Pete Walker's term, will run for the permanent position in April. The only other filing so far was by Marcia Speer for village trustee. Paxton. Four of the six aldermen whose city council seats are up for election filed. Eric Evans, Ward 1. Justin Withers, 2. Rob Pacey, 3. And Mike Wilson, 4. Thomasboro. Five candidates filed for three trustee positions. Incumbents Dustin Rhodes, Anthony Grillo, and Anna Martin, and challengers Justin Cheney and John M. Curry. School boards. Two filed for re-election to GCMS board. Gibson City. Two of three incumbents filed for re-election to the Gibson City Melvin Sibley School Board. Emily Tucker Davis of Gibson City, and Steve Swearingen of Melvin. Elsewhere in Ford County, incumbent Steve Pacey of Paxton was the first to file for re-election to one of three seats open in the Paxton-Buckley-Lotus School Board. Others who've made their school board candidacies official 2 days into the filing period: Armstrong. John M. Gordon was the first to file for a seat on the Armstrong Township High Board. Bismarck Henning, incumbent Cheryl Brummett, is officially in the race. Georgetown Ridge Farm. Nancy Heiser Dallenberg became the first of four incumbents to file. Gifford. A trio of newcomers filed for the grade school board. Carolyn Franson, Allison Suits, and Tracy Harris. Ludlow. Thomas Fultz, Geraldine Roberts, Mary Nuku, Rhonda Moore, and Aaron Brooker all filed to run for spots on the grade school board. Oakwood. Randy Smith, one of four members whose terms end next year, will run for re-election. Potomac. Incumbent Melissa Murphy and newcomer Jeffrey L. Edwards, Jr. will both be on the ballot. Prairie View, Ogden. Chad Pruitt will run for re-election. Rantoul. Newcomer Jack Anderson joined three Rantoul City Schools incumbents, Joan Fitzgerald, Andy Graham, and John Brotherton, in filing. For the Rantoul Township High School Board, incumbents Jeremy Larson and Janet Brotherton and newcomer Monica Hall all filed. Urbana accident. Man accused of chasing after other driver with mallet, by Mary Schenk, Urbana. A Champaign man who got in a car accident and demanded damages from the other party while wielding a mallet is due back in court next month. Kevin Henry, 30, was charged Monday with a single count of armed robbery. He remained jailed Tuesday in lieu of $30,000 bond on the Class X felony, which carries a prison term of 6 to 30 years upon conviction. An Urbana police report said Henry, who listed addresses in the 700 block of South Randolph Street and the 1700 block of Valley Road, got into a traffic accident with a 30-year-old Urbana man about 11 a.m. Sunday at Florida and Cottage Grove Avenues in Urbana. Both drivers pulled over and apparently disagreed about who was at fault. The Urbana man reported to police that Henry told him he would have to pay for the damage, then grabbed a mallet from his car and began chasing him. The man said when he stopped running, Henry demanded his coat, gold chain, and wallet as payment. A female passenger with Henry then allegedly got in the man's car and drove it about a block before getting out and returning to Henry's vehicle. When police stopped Henry, they found the man's stolen items, including his wallet, which fell to the ground when Henry got out to talk to police. Henry admitted that he held a mallet while talking to the other man, but said the other man was threatening him. Henry also told police that the victim voluntarily gave him his leather jacket, wallet, and gold necklace to compensate him for repairs to his car. Police recovered a mallet that was about 14.5 inches long and weighed 3.5 pounds from Henry's car. Judge John Kennedy ordered Henry to have no contact with the man and to be back in court January 15. Champaign Railroad Crossing. Motorist who went around arm escapes injury after train hits car. She feared gas running out. By Mary Shank, Champaign. A woman who admitted going around railroad crossing arms because she feared running out of gas escaped serious injury but saw her car take heavy damage when it was struck by a train. A Champaign police report said Jasmine Lies was driving east in the 200 block of Bradley Avenue about 6:35 p.m. Monday when she could see the railroad crossing signals flashing and the crossing arms down. Seeing another vehicle going around the arms and fearing she would run out of gas, Lies chose to drive around them too. Her car was hit by the southbound Amtrak train. Witnesses confirmed that she went around the arms. Lies was able to crawl out of the driver's side window of her heavily damaged Pontiac Grand Am. The report said she was ticketed for disobeying a signal indicating an approaching train. She was taken to Carle Foundation Hospital for what was described as minor injuries. She was treated and released. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, December 12, 2018. Please stay tuned.